This is the E-Square Podcast recording live from the Junction Complex. You are now making a worldwide connection.
Elevate your mind. Expand your thinking.
And so my fellow Americans.
It's the E-Square Podcast.
E-Square Podcast, I'm Easy Mo, and today, no introduction needed. The legendary stoner, the legendary artist.
Love.
Vegas very own, Dizzy Wright, man.
Peace, family. Thank you for having me.
Oh, for sure, man. I'm so excited to have you, dog, because, you know, this is this show's been about a year. I've been doing this show about a year.
Okay.
And you really, you know, it was a goal to have you on, bro. Not only because, you know, I'm from Vegas, too, so... You know, Dizzy Wright is synonymous with the, you know, with the whole city, the whole scene. But, you know, I'm just such a big fan, dog. Like, a real fucking fan, dog. I
appreciate that, bro.
Yeah, yeah. I got some embarrassing Dizzy Wright fan stories, bro.
Oh, word.
Sure. Yeah, yeah, some embarrassing ones.
Okay, I had to take a sip.
I had to take a sip. Because it's funny. It's just like, we can get into that later. But how you feeling, man?
I'm feeling good, bro. Blessed.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. How is getting back into the swing of things for you?
It's been cool.
Yeah, things were opening back up. You starting to do shows again?
Yeah, we actually got our first show in a while, in about 10 days.
Mm.
So
did that Texas show didn't happen, huh?
Texas show did happen, but it was just a couple songs.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't really what we used to. We normally get up there and do like, you know, 30 minutes to an hour. So
yeah.
It was just a couple songs, so we couldn't really get our feet wet like that. But,
yeah.
But I'm excited for this next one.
Where's it at?
Flint, Michigan.
Oh, you're going back home.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
okay.
It's first time doing a show there, so I'm excited.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, damn. So how's your relationship with Flint? Like, they rock with you tough out there?
I'm not sure. I guess I'm going to find out in 10 days. You know, when I go out there and I do shows in Detroit, a lot of people do come from Flint and show love.
Mm-hmm.
But not as much as I would like.
Right.
So I figured I got to go there to really figure it out. So I definitely want to tap in and see what that's looking like.
Yeah. Are they good out there? Or is that water shit still fucking with them? Because I heard like last year their water still fucked.
Yeah. I don't know if I'm even in a position to speak on that. My grandmother passed away about a year and a half ago.
Oh, I'm sorry, bro.
It's all love. But she was the one that was still kind of there that we were close to. So I haven't been back in a while. I'm not sure. But the last time I checked, you know, it was kind of rocky. You know, everybody couldn't fit the filters on their,
their
water situation at home.
That's scary, dog.
Yeah, word.
We got our own water problems out here in Vegas, man.
I see.
You seen Lake Mead? That shit look like a toilet that's broken, bro. That shit ain't filled back
real,
up,
yeah,
man.
Yeah. I've been checking into it.
Yeah. I heard you in one interview that you said, you don't want to raise your kids out here. You still feel like that? Because I'm just thinking, like, all these people moving to Vegas, like, the resources is drying up. You still feel like moving away?
Nah, it's changed a little bit. The Knights wasn't here. The Raiders wasn't here. Aces wasn't here. Was, you know, nothing to really, you know, for them to grow into. It wasn't really a place for kids, I feel like.
Yeah.
It was just kind of built for the 21 and over scene. Right. So, you know, we made it through, but, you know, it was kind of weird trying to, you know, make it work.
Yeah.
But now I feel like it's even more culture, more things to be proud of, cling on to, and be involved in. And I just think teams bring, like, cities together and shit like that. So it's a little different now. You know, they were born here, so now I feel like they got all these teams. I'm like, this shit is really y'all shit.
Yeah.
No, so.
Yeah, the city's definitely transforming. You know, into like a real city.
Absolutely.
And it's starting to feel more like a city, and it's dope because it is bringing people together, bro. People were never hockey fans or hockey fans now, you know? And
absolutely.
And I never thought I'd be a Raider fan. Never thought that.
Me neither. We got something to be proud of, though, because
yeah,
it's like,
for sure.
Damn, oh, this belong to us? Okay,
yeah.
I can get behind that.
Yeah, them fucking, what do they call it? The Darth ship? What do they call it? The stadium? Like the Star Wars, looked like the mothership or some shit.
Oh yeah. The Legion.
Yeah, it's crazy, man. But man, you've been on such a journey, man. You just turned 30 last year. Turned 30 this year. Do you reflect on your career?
Actually, during the pandemic is the first time I think I really reflect.
Yeah, because it's just been an ongoing thing, huh?
Yeah, just having the time to like slow down for the first time in so long. Yeah, I got a chance to reflect.
Yeah, how do you feel about that? Because your journey, you know, Like I said earlier, we're roughly the same age. So I've been a part of your journey for a long time, from a distant, you know, from in a weird way. And you know, your journey has been so crazy, full of ups and downs. But you're still here. You're being consistent. You're doing your thing. How do you feel about like where you are now and what you've accomplished?
I'm proud, bro. I'm proud. Just because, you know, I know that I relied on the music. You know what I'm saying, and the message. And I stuck to that. When I was going through some of my darkest times and shit like that, I just found a way to motivate the world, you know, and I found motivation in that, you know. And I think just sticking to the script, I'm proud of that, you know. I know there's a lot more that could have been done, but if everybody knew what was going down on the back end and what, you know, had to be pushed through. They'd be proud, you know? So I know that that story will eventually be told, but I like that everybody's just focused on the journey and the music and the message and not, like, all the personal shit that I had to go through along the way.
Yeah, for sure, bro. You have been inspirational, dog. Like, you know, you kind of, you introduced me to some very important books, The Four Agreements. You know, you introduced me to that, you know, Smoke Out Conversation, all your bodies of work, you know, you've been educational. And for me, like, I never really had a role model in a sense. Like, I did, but he was like my older brother. He's always in jail, always taught me what not to do. But when, like, you know, so we, you know, kids like us, we look to, you know, athletes, musicians, and you being so close to home had a big impact on kids like me, you know what I'm saying, growing up.
Yeah. Appreciate that.
No, for sure, bro. And I appreciate you, bro. And it's, and you know, has consistency, like, something, has that always been something that you knew you had to be? Or has it just been like, I'm gonna just keep going, you're not really thinking about it?
No, I knew I had to be consistent. Especially coming from Vegas. Just how much goes on here. And just how quick the music industry moves, and how labels move and how they want to operate sometimes. Sometimes you just got to look at everything and see what works for you. Sometimes they present ideas to you based off of the knowledge that they have, that they got from working with another artist.
Right, you know.
And they kind of put that same shift on you, but you might be able to work harder than that. So I had to find, like, my balance in all of this, and, like, consistency. I always got something to say, you know. It, like, finding a hit record and, like, having the biggest record, it's not really why I got into it. I realized it's, like, something that I had to do. But just being consistent, being able to do music and put a message out there consistently was kind of the plan.
It just baffles my mind, bro. And it, as, you know, I've been in the Vegas scene for a while and, you know, doing the local shit or whatever. And, you know, when somebody touches fame at a young age, it's easy to, like, fall into the bullshit, right? And you've kept your head on your shoulders through not only life but in the music industry too, bro. How does somebody, you know, we're still young, but how have you been able to keep your head on your shoulders this long?
You know, it's crazy, bro. I had, like, a whole music industry experience with my moms.
Right.
Before, you know, I ever even started, like, my own solo journey, you know? We were trying to do a group thing, you know, me and my brothers. And, like, how I got into hip-hop, bro, I'm gonna be honest with you, my mom was in the music industry, and, you know, she just one day was like, yo. If I wrote these raps, would you rap them? Type shit, you know? And I was like, yeah, easy call. Like, and I knew nothing about it, though. And then the more I learned about it, the more I wanted to pin my own expressions. And me and my mom would butt heads and shit like that. But how we would butt heads was a very music industry type of relationship. Wasn't like a mom and a son. It was like a manager and an artist.
Trying to control you a little bit.
Yeah, and I was young and responding terrible to that shit. And certain things my mom was trying to prepare me for because that's what the music industry required. She didn't realize that she was kind of like showing me everything that, like, I absolutely didn't want to be a part of. So, you know, when I first, you know, got the tools to be able to make the music and shit out here, It was, I knew exactly what I didn't want to be a part of right away. And I think that separated me from a lot of artists. A lot of us, you really don't know, like, what you're willing to do, what you're not willing to do. But I knew exactly what I wasn't going to be a part of. Because I had kind of like a small dose of that with dealing with my mom early. You know, not knowing that down the road would, you know,
be a blessing.
Be a blessing in disguise, because it made me and my mom's relationship rocky. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I became like a little rebel. And but I'm thankful for the experience, you know. But that in itself taught me a lot, because I was young. I'm like, damn, all that shit I went through, you know what I'm saying? Really, I feel like prepared me for this moment. It kind of made me appreciate, you know, the gems that my mom was trying to give me, that whether I took them and ran with them or if I learned from them and decided to do something different, I feel like it kind of put me a little ahead of the curve.
Mm-hmm.
And then on top of that, you know, we had this new internet shit, you know, and the internet shit, you know, I just kept my foot on the gas with that.
Yeah, you knew it was important from the get-go.
Yeah.
It's so crazy, our generation, you think about it, the internet is so, like, normal to us now. But when we were, like, you know, like, I don't think Instagram, we were already in our 20s when Instagram came out.
Yeah,
So it's just a totally different world. But, you know, you really did capitalize on that internet shit. And it's like you laid your foundation in a big way. Yeah. That's just being smart. That's just being smart, bro.
You know, back then, though, the internet did look a little weird. Mm-hmm. You know, niggas was like, yeah, I ain't fucking with that internet shit. That shit is like for the goofy type niggas and shit. And for me, I kind of just thought, like, damn, I could reach people in, like, New York and, like, different places.
It's a tool.
It felt like, you know, a way early for me. So I did work that shit. And I was annoying as fuck. You ask anybody to know me? I was the nigga that sent my links to everybody, went to Twitter jail every day. Like, I was mad annoying. Like,
you gotta be, though. Like, when you coming up, you gotta take that extra step.
You gotta believe. It's about how much you believe in yourself, for sure, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a big flaw of a lot of up-and-coming artists now. They're just scared to look lame, so they're scared to do that type of shit, you know? They're more worried about, like, you know, buying their followers and buying their views and all that shit and looking cool, but it's really not, it equals nothing.
Well, that's the thing, is now the industry has shifted to more how it looks than what it really is.
Right.
So they just see it. Like, if it look good, they feel like people will gravitate towards it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just no longevity in that. You know, people give up on that, forget about that type of shit as quick as they get on it. So,
I wanted to talk to you about that too, is like when you came in the game, it was way more so about skills, the artistry. You know, but now it's like that's still there for sure, but it's almost kind of out of the window. It's like you said, it's about what it looks like.
for sure, bro.
Is that disheartening to you?
At times. And I realize life gonna have its shifts. Mm-hmm. You know, I see the ups and like where hip hop went, you know, from the 80s to the 90s to the 2000s. You know, it's gonna make its shifts, you know, but there's a base root, you know?
Yeah.
And that base root is like soulful shit that touches your spirit, that shifts your spirit. That shit will always be the base root, but there will always be elements that continuously pop into this shit because we constantly growing. So sometimes, you know, I see people gravitate towards things and I just know that it's like not the best for the culture. This is like, I feel like taking steps backwards. But then I also realized that the shit has to constantly shift.
Yeah,
it has to turn up. So,
part of the evolution.
Yeah, and then I learned to love it, learned to enjoy it for what it is, you know? It's a growing mechanism.
Yeah, I had to stop myself from being an old bitter dude, you know what I'm saying? Like, hating on this young kind of, this young music or the new generation, but I realized I just didn't understand it.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what I mean? And it's really just like, you know, a 19-year-old kid, their brain's not even developed yet, right? So you can't really judge them too hard for just, you know, most of the time they're just out there having fun with their friends, right? Like I'm sure you started too, just having fun with your friends.
Absolutely.
So it's like, you know, once I look at it through that lens, I'm like, okay, I can't be the whole bitter dude.
Absolutely. I feel you 100%.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? But your journey's been, you know, you've been in it for, you know, over a decade now. Have you ever felt like quitting? You ever felt like, man, like, I need to do something else?
Nah, bro. I mean, you know, like, Actually, you know, like recently, like in the pandemic, I'm like, yo, man, I'm going to do this shit, get this shit in. But as soon as I get it all the way where I need it to be, make my exit, man. And I never really thought like that. Like, I,
wow.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. But like you, like I say, it's when I look at the hip hop industry, sometimes I realize that shock value wins. You know what mm-hmm. I'm saying? Major labels can really only do what they can for artists that are unknown. Right. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Once you known, you got to really figure out how to wiggle your way through the industry and where you want to be and how you want to be looked at and things like that. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people maintain their position by, you know, doing shock value shit.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a shock value type of nigga.
No, no.
You know what I'm saying? That's... But I realize, you know how they say all publicity is good publicity, mm-hmm. all that shit, you know. I can dig that, you know, but it just don't move. It just shifts my spirit different. So I can't be out here doing shit that, like, yeah. I do some shit and it'll make me feel like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah, I got to be right with myself. I like to just be cool and make the music and shit like yeah. that.
Well, that's where the longevity comes into play, right? Because you have that shock value. You have that moment. You have your 15 seconds of fame. And then it's over with, like, you know what I'm saying? And then
or you just searching for the next shock, man. Right, spending right. your life trying to find right. out how to shock motherfuckers who really yeah. don't give shit about you. They just want to see if you can impress them with some shock value.
Yeah.
You know, for me, that's just not like anything I would want to chase.
Yeah, like your name gets attached to that moment, and that's all anybody ever knows you for. And that has to be a nightmare.
Man.
God damn.
Man.
Bro. But have you, you know, just talking to you as a person, bro, and just listening to your music for so long, do you have like a Bible that you wrote, like your own moral codes, like that you just live by? Because you're just, you know, you've evolved and grown as an artist, but you've remained the same. Like, you know who you are. You stick by your codes. And that's something that honestly, as a Vegas person, as born and raised here, and you being a representative for us, it's like, it makes me proud. Like, I'm glad we got somebody like Dizzy, you know, showing
man,
the way, you know.
I appreciate that.
Nah, for
bro.
Real, because if we had, like, you know, one of them goofballs, it'd be like,
they might have stunned on y'all.
Exactly, exactly. But we got somebody with, you know, with high moral standards, and that means a lot to us.
I appreciate that, bro. I really don't. You know, it's crazy, bro. Who I am is who I always had to be, right? Like, I had a real black experience growing up.
Mm-hmm.
Single mom, 5 kids. My older brother, 7 years older than me, showing me everything that I shouldn't do.
Right.
You know, learning from his mistakes, but having to be like a role model for my little brothers and sisters and pick up the slack and kind of be the older brother when I didn't want to be the older brother.
Right.
You know? You know what I'm saying? So I always had to kind of play that role, that peaceful role in my crib. Like, mm-hmm. I had to bring the peace, and I had to try to, you know, my mom used to call me my older brother's lawyer. Like, you always coming yeah. up in here trying yeah. to talk your brother back into some shit. Yeah, like, yeah, you yeah. know, because he'd run out, he'd think he was grown and run away, and mm-hmm. then, you know, and yeah. I'd be trying to talk his ass back into the house. Like, my mom, like, yeah. little lawyer.
Yeah.
But I always had to, like, be this, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And then as I got older, I realized it was the same way with the homies. Mm-hmm. I was like, this was the version that the homies got, you mm-hmm. know what I'm saying? And then when I started putting in the music in return, the homies was like, hey, nigga, this shit is...
People need that.
People need to hear this type of shit.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, gave me the juice I needed to go out here and, like, you know, feel the world. But,
yeah,
yeah, bro, the process is... Mm-hmm. It's crazy sometimes.
No, for real, I'm already knowing. I kind of grew up in a similar situation. My older brother in and out of jail. You know, I'm the middle child. I had to, like, you know what I'm saying, keep it cool. I had to, you know, always have his back the same way. So I could relate on that level.
Absolutely.
And so you do become like this level head. Like,
yeah.
you understand the madness, what he's going through, but then you understand, like, you gotta find that balance. You know what I'm saying?
Word.
What was I going to ask you, bro? So you being a... You like being a role model, and some people, like, they get famous and they get a following and they get fans, and they say, "Oh, I'm not a role model. Don't do what I do." Do you think about that, and do you think of yourself as a role model? Because you are a role model in a lot of ways, but do you, like, take on that responsibility?
You know, I try to my message is to, like, you know, try to follow the role models in your in your household, you know, and start there instead of outside. And if you can't get nothing inside your household, then, you know what I'm saying, I understand.
Yeah.
You know, but for me, I know that, like, 10 toes down all the time, solid. So, you know what I'm saying? But I can't be everybody's role model. But I got kids, you know? I want to set a good example for them.
For sure.
And, you know, I might not do some shit because of my kids, and you might be able to get away with that because you don't got kids. So it's just all about what you following and, like, you know, what's inspiring you that I'm doing. And then I'm good with that, but, like, I don't really like to get caught up on that. Like, if...
Too much pressure?
Too much pressure.
Yeah.
Too much pressure because we got to grow, right? And I'm for sure not perfect. And, you know, sometimes we react off of emotion. You know what I'm saying? And, like, some artists to get out there and broadcast all of their reactions and allow people to nitpick at their personalities while they're growing, you know, I ain't going to do that. You know, I'm going to do all that in the dark, but definitely not going to make it seem like I'm some type of angel, you know what I'm saying? But, you know, I know niggas need niggas to follow, good niggas to follow. I be looking for it. Some of my homies don't want to be my role model. They like, nigga, bro, I will kill a nigga. Do not follow me, bro. And I just be like, bro, but you look how you take care of your family. Look how you woody-wop. So it's just all about, you know, what you pulling.
Yeah, man. Fatherhood, everybody knows you're a great dad. You know, everybody, you speak on it. You're open about it.
I appreciate that.
How has that really changed you in your mind and, like, the way you see the world? Is it force you to slow down or what?
It forced me to want to make it happen for real, like, and not be playing with it, you know?
You feel like you were playing with it before?
Kind of. I feel like I, you know, I didn't really know if I wanted to do it, you know what I'm saying? I didn't really know if, you know what I'm saying, I could give it everything that I wanted to give it. I went through, like I said, with my mom's, I went through kind of like a tricky situation where, you know, I was kind of thrown off on some major label shit, so I didn't really know if there was a place for what I wanted to do. But then again, I didn't even know about, like, home studios and shit like that until I was in one, recording in one. And I was like, oh, shit, nigga, you can record in
your That wasn't crib. A thing back then.
Yeah, and I was like, what the fuck? Like, you know what I'm saying? So as I just started learning, and then I learned about this independent route, and just the more I started learning about these different things, when I had my daughter, you know, it was kind of like, yo, we got to really start trying to figure out how to make this shit work, plant the seeds to make it work, take some risks, and get out here and really try to, you know, make it happen.
Yeah, that's so crazy, man. I just, you know, when you're coming up here, man, see, great music. What do they say? Great music marks time. And, like, some of your music has marked time, bro.
The homie will agree with that.
Yeah. Surely. And Smoke Out Conversations. I remember this where I was living. I was living at a Flamingo in Decatur. I had an apartment with my partner. And Smoke Out Conversations just came, just hit the streets. And I had, that was the first time we ever saw anything like that, like, from the city. Word. And it was such a crazy time. The music was impeccable. So much soul, so much emotion in that.
Appreciate that.
Is that like your baby? Do you look back on that as like your baby?
Yeah, bro. It's actually my 10-year anniversary of that.
Oh, congratulations. Yeah. Congratulations, yes, man. Yes, damn.
Yes. 420 next year is my 10-year anniversary of that album. It is. I'm extremely proud of that album.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of kicked shit off, you know? And I didn't have to, like, think about hits and think about, like, you know, I was just making music and just, like, you know, putting it out there.
Yeah.
It was a good time.
Yeah, it was, man, that album, bro, is, and that's one of my funny Tizzy Wright fan stories, is I had the hard copy of the Dizzy Wright, or the Smoke Out Conversation.
Okay.
And at your 702 listening party. This is so embarrassing, bro. But at the 702 listening party at Institution, right? I was there.
I remember that.
I brought it there, because I wanted you to sign it, right? So you were backstage behind that wall, whatever. Yeah. And my homegirl was back there. I'm not gonna say her name, but my homegirl was back there, and she was like, "Yeah, just come to the gate or whatever. I'll slide you in or whatever. We'll have you sign it, or whatever." And somebody was tripping back there. Somebody was tripping. So you were preoccupied, but I had got in front of you for 5 seconds. And I was like, "Hey, bro, can you sign this CD cover or whatever?" Yeah. Bro, he was like, "Yeah, you got a pen?" I was like, "Oh, I didn't have a pen, bro." I literally waited for like probably like a solid hour to get back there, and like, I didn't have a pen, dog.
Damn.
I was sick. And I was just standing there with I was like, it was so embarrassing, bro. I was like, felt like a fucking retard. Felt like a fucking retard, bro. Terrible.
Damn.
But I go to all your shows, man. I've been to every single show at the Brooklyn Bowl. Every time Dizzy Wright is in Vegas, I'm there.
I appreciate that, family.
Yeah, for sure, bro. It's you were the first person to make me a fan, to introduce me to like what a real fan is. Cause I was never really like, you know, like I grew up listening to 50 Cent and all these people, but like, you know, yeah, you love their music, you watch them, but you're not a fan until you go to the shows, you wait for the meet and greets, you know what I'm saying, you buy the merch.
Absolutely.
And you're the first person to do that for me, bro.
That's fire, bro. That means everything to me.
The anticipation to this interview was kind of painful because I was like fucking so nervous, dog. Cause I was for real. It's like just it was like, damn, bro. Like, am I gonna be able to hold myself together? But I think I'm doing all right.
No, you're doing great.
I'm Gucci, right?
Yeah.
Shout out to Peanut. Yeah. Oh yeah. And by the way, shout out to the Still Moving crew, man. Cause
thank you, family.
Solid crew. Euros, Angel, Peanut, Reezy, the whole family, bro. It's like, you know, solid people, bro. You got some good people around you for sure.
Brother.
Yeah. It's dope, man. I had Angel on here. I had Euros on here. It's dope, man.
Yeah, man.
They
you're doing your shit, man.
I'm trying, bro. what was I gonna ask you? Oh, let's talk about Vegas, like you know, the scene out here and you coming up, and but the scene has totally changed now.
Right.
Yeah. So how do you feel about it? Are you like pay attention to it, or where are you at with Vegas now?
Yeah, I don't really know what's going on out here too much outside of the artists that was grinding back when I was grinding.
Mm-hmm.
But I know there's some, you know, I be hearing about different little stuff, but, you know, nothing that's really sticking like that. I'm pretty sure some niggas out here that's really doing their thing. It always is. But, you know, consistency, you know, that's at the top of the, you know, everybody around me know that. Like, mm-hmm. if you being consistent, I'm for sure gonna hear you, and I'm gonna be inspired by that, and like, you know, it's gonna be what it's gonna be.
Yeah.
But it's a lot different from when I was coming up. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And they got to we ain't really have like Instagram and like no place to like not a lot of niggas even had music videos.
Mm-mm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
When I was coming up, like. Jazz Laser was the first person that I saw with a music video that I was like, oh, niggas is doing videos?
Mm-hmm.
I was like, what? Music videos? I ain't even think of that.
Yeah.
I was like, what the fuck?
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, we hopped on it. Like, mm-hmm. you know, my first music video, I went and found a nigga that was recording bugs. This nigga was recording insects. I'm like, nigga.
Now everybody got to fucking shoot a music video.
Yeah,
man.
I'm like, nigga, them insects look clear as hell, nigga. You think you can shoot this video, nigga?
Damn.
But, you know, it's a whole lot different now. The flex happens a lot earlier.
Yeah.
You know, everybody wants to make it look, you know, amazing before it's amazing. So mm-hmm. it's nothing to grow into.
Right.
You know, with Vegas, we see everything. Everything comes here. Mm. So it's easy to be like, man, I could do that shit better than him. And niggas going like, no originality, mm-hmm. you know, so nothing really popping out and shit like that. And then I'm not a young nigga running around the streets and at the parties and shit anymore. So I don't know the young niggas that's got it jumping and, mm-hmm. you know, I don't know them yet.
Yeah.
And it's just crazy how much quicker everything is moving
mm-hmm.
these days. So I get why kids and younger, I don't want to call them kids, but like younger artists, like feel like they got to like shock the world right away because they feel like they'll be forgotten because there's so much shit that goes on now. It's like, you know, niggas got news on the Instagram. It's just wild now.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah, man, it has to be kind of weird for you, though, like coming from Vegas and you being like the first person that's ever done anything like you've done. You know, I've gotten out the city. You have a real career. Like you have you have a real rap career, right? So everybody looks to you. I'll tell you firsthand, everybody looks to you as like, you know, this is what we trying to be, or this is what we trying to one up. You know what I mean?
Word.
Do you feel that, or are you just in your own, you just in your own little bubble?
No, yeah, I feel that. Mm-hmm. I know, yeah, I know everybody, everybody want, and I'm like, hey, work for it. It's you double niggas lap me up. Easy. Yeah. You just gotta know that like I'm working overtime all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So to get where I'm at or to pass me, you got to work. You got to put in every day, like, for a long time.
Yeah.
Every day, I wake up every single day and figure out how to make steps in this shit. Mm-hmm. And I've been doing that shit for a decade, every day.
Yeah.
It started with going to Twitter jail. Every day, I got to go to Twitter jail once. Every day I didn't go hard enough today.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And like another thing that I worked the system on some Vegas shit, you know, when I was younger. Like I knew that like, you know, everybody was like trying to get money, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Sell they shit, you know. That type. Not a lot of niggas had merch and shit like that. Like they was just like make t-shirts for themselves, their crew and shit back in the day.
Right.
Niggas didn't like have no merch booths and shit like that. But like, you know, niggas want to get paid for shows and niggas want to get, you know, sell their CDs and things like that. And I ain't want none of that, you know. I just wanted to get my name out there.
Mm.
I did everything.
Mm-hmm.
I did everything in the city. Like, every little show, everything. White people shit, black people shit, Mexican people shit, Filipino shit, Asian shit. I did all type of parties. Everything. I just wanted people to know my name.
Mm.
And, you know, I had a couple little females. I won't say their name. But, you know, they looked out for me back in the day, you know. And I worked that situation, you know what I mean, by getting, like, little CDs and shit that, you know, I didn't have to, like, invest in, but, you know, I had people who fuck with me that helped me out, and I would just pass that shit out.
Mm.
You know, some niggas got to go to work and work, you know, 8 hours a day, all week, 40-hour weeks, you know, and invest their hard-earned money into their CDs, so they need that back.
Right.
I understand that shit. You know, coming from Vegas, I had to work that shit.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I grew up, I couldn't do the pimp shit fully. You know what I'm saying?
Me either. I tried.
I think we all try.
Yeah, I ain't like, got it in
me. I ain't gorilla enough.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. But like, I did have a little finesse in me to get my name out there, and that's what I was more focused on. Like, and not be just wasting the money on like bullshit, right?
Yeah. So like the image and shit. Yeah.
Exactly. So I like invested in myself, and I dead ass, bro. I feel like I gave out so many CDs. For free, like, yo, just pop this shit in, bro. Mm-hmm. If you fuck with that shit, just nigga, tweet me. Let me know.
Yeah.
I follow you, bro. Yeah. I did that shit for, like, 2 years, like, on just giving my shit out for free. It wasn't until Smoke Out Conversations 2012, you know. I graduated 2009. I was getting it in, you know. And I didn't start selling anything until 2012.
The grind, bro. You got to be ready to grind.
You got to be ready to grind. And, like, I was... Bro, Smoke Out Conversations was a mixtape. It was a mixtape. And, you know, the Funk Volume niggas at the time was like, is this original music? I'm like, yeah, but it's a mixtape, though.
Yeah.
And they like, no, nigga, this is an album. And I'm like, I don't think niggas is ready to buy yet. 3 years later, all the shit I had already done, I'm like, I don't know if niggas is ready to buy this shit. Like, and they like, man, we selling this shit. So that's how I ended up pushing it back from... February to April, almost 10 years ago when it was first coming out. But yeah, bro, a nigga did give away a lot and like plant a lot of seeds. I had no formula. I didn't know what the fuck I was doing.
Right.
I just knew that nobody had did it from here.
Exactly.
And it felt like every thing that everybody was doing wasn't working.
Right.
So I didn't follow nobody's formula.
That's good. That's yeah. Because that's good that you didn't, that you knew you didn't, you know it all. Right.
No facts.
You had to try different things. You had to like
a grip of different
you
know shit.
You had to fail.
Yeah.
You had to start failing.
And niggas will judge you along the way.
Mm-hmm.
Make you feel crazy and all type of shit. Niggas yeah. will try to tear you down along the way too, make it seem like you bugging.
Yeah.
But little things just happen and like they keep happening and then mm-hmm. formulate.
Yeah, it's just manifestation, bro. You put it in the work, like
absolution.
Man, it's do you get the due credit from the city, or do you even care about it?
I do care about it, bro, and I don't feel like I'd get the due credit. Mm-hmm. You know, I actually addressed that on, I got a new little project that it's just a little six-piecer that I'm about to drop, but I kind of addressed that in the new project a little bit, but I don't. But you know what? You know, I'm not sure what it is, you know, but sometimes I just think to myself, like, maybe Vegas wants somebody that's will rally behind somebody that's born and raised in Vegas.
You think that's what it is?
Maybe. I don't know. But see, because I don't know what else it could be. But then again, it's like this city is going, it's, I feel like sometimes it's going to be hard for them to really rally behind anybody here, you know, because
mm-hmm.
they rally behind big artists.
Right.
This is Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. Like, everybody in the world who's popping will eventually end up in Las Vegas.
Right, right.
Like, I mean, yeah. everybody. Like, so that's who this city rallied behind.
Right.
We have too many options.
Yeah, true. It's tough out here. It's a tough market.
Think about it. You can go... If motherfucking the options sometimes are, it's like we're spoiled sometimes. Mm-hmm. I mean, you got this person has a residency. This person is here tonight. This person is here tomorrow. This person is here.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? And then you as a local, you know, you got a show in the mix of all of that.
Right. On a Saturday night, it's like
trying to compete. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Because during the week, you know, everybody is working in normal, like mm-hmm. usual. So what you competing with out here is, I get it. Yeah. I was, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Even, you know, 13 years ago, bruh, I felt the same way where I was like, damn, we are competing against the whole world,
mm-hmm.
you know, because they all come here. Some of these little cities, they don't get to see so nothing. Many artists. Like, yeah. they don't get to see nobody. Like, yeah. most of these artists don't even stop by those spots.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So it's like, they can really rally behind an artist that can bring the city together and put on a dope show and, like, that can turn into something. Vegas is a little different. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And I get why it's harder for... artists out here to really make a name for themselves, but I really don't know the full reason why it isn't a little more like, man, damn, Dizzy been representing for us for a long ass time.
Yeah. Can I give you some insight?
I would love it.
Okay. All right. I think from what I see in the conversations I've had, I think a lot of people maybe think it's too positive. And they get this image of you that you're just this positive rapper when that's not the case at all.
Word.
Like or they put you in this category of a conscious rapper, right? And that's not the case either, right?
Word.
The way you deliver, you know, your message is still relatable to, you know, the streets and to the white kids. It encompasses, you know, a lot. But I think that's one reason.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? And, you know, people want to hear about people killing people and all drug dealing and all this shit. And that's not what you do.
100%, bro.
That's got to be frustrating.
It is, because I know that, like, Vegas wants to have a, we already have the strip and the, taking up all of the damn shine.
Mm-hmm.
So the last thing, and it's soft. What I'm bringing to the table is soft, but compared to like the gangster shit that's coming out, that, you know, sometimes you'll hear it on the radio sometimes,
mm-hmm.
it's soft compared to that, because mm-hmm. I'm not going down that route, right? Like, that's not the route that I'm going down. I'm coming from a whole different type of black experience, right? Mm-hmm. But it's like you said, it's a black experience. It's mm-hmm. not like to this, to that. But yeah, man, when the culture is kind of pushing things to be a certain way,
yeah,
persona, all that shit, you know, hip hop is supposed to be a little harder.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And they expect, I think Vegas wants a more gangster image that will represent at least the streets of Vegas. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Which I understand.
But I feel like you do that. That to me, you do. You just do it in your own way, but that your way is honest.
It's honest. You know? And I think that if I gassed it and if I jumped on the internet and I showed my guns and I showed my homies carrying their guns.
Put the money
in my ear like when I got paid, you know. I feel like they would love that shit. Ooh, I want that shit. Yeah. Hate on that shit, but love that shit, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It's unfortunate. Like, you know, that's what we gotta gravitate towards because that's the quickest way that niggas just end up in jail.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And then I'll go back and talk about some shit like that. And like you say, to be honest and honorable, but the culture is just this kind of how it has shifted.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, for sure. Yeah, it's, you know, you have your longevity, you have your fan base, so you can't be too mad at it, right? Like, you got a real fan base, though. Yeah,
it's nothing to be, it's nothing to be upset about. Yeah. It's just like you got to always try to find your balance and find ways to, I guess we're just like, channel your inner motherfucking LeBron James. Yeah. Figure out how to, you mm-hmm. know, just tackle that shit even if you don't got all the pieces.
Yeah. You showed us the way and you showed us the way on how to get up out of here and be successful. Cause you know, I used to manage artists too. And so when I was managing, Funk Volume was in full swing. And so I looked at Dame as like, that's what I want to do. I want to take this route as hitting those little markets and
right
selling the merch and, you know, not worrying about, you know, putting out good quality music and not worrying about the big hit because, like, you know, the mathematical probabilities of that happening is very slim.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I tell everybody, bro, you gave us the blueprint for sure and getting out of town.
Man, I appreciate that. That was huge, too.
Yeah.
Do you know how I met Funk Volume?
Yeah, here, right? Was it here? Boulevard Mall?
No.
Where Dame found you at that competition?
Yeah, that competition. But that was, the competition, he wasn't here.
Oh.
He was...
It was two different ones, right?
Yeah, it was one competition. Bro, I got a text message from a local artist here. I won't say his name, but he a legend. I got a text message from him saying that he was opening for YG in front of the Boulevard Mall.
Mm.
I came down to see what he was doing. I'm like, what this nigga doing that I'm not doing? Mm-hmm. I'm like, this nigga's opening for YG? Yeah. I got to see what my boy bringing to the table.
Yeah.
You know? And I came and I seen like everybody had like numbers on their chest and shit. And I found out it was a competition.
Mm.
It's just always crazy because the domino effect of this text message is like
kicked off your career, huh?
Yeah, it's like crazy. Like, you know what I'm saying? Because I came, bro, and I was like, what's going on? Like, they just like, oh, it's a competition for, you know, Sheik and Def Jam, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
I was like, can I get in? And I got in the competition. And they picked two people from Vegas to go to California. And then I went to like four other different places and picked two artists from there. And we all went to California, and that's where Funk Volume,
mm-hmm.
Dame was.
And
I won that whole competition, though.
Yeah.
I kind of sidebar Funk Volume a little bit.
Because other people were trying to talk to you, too, right?
I was trying to do the Def Jam deal.
Oh, they gave you some bullshit deal. That's right.
Yeah. They didn't really give me the deal. They offered me, some, like, wild shit at the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that really fucked me up too, you know, because I had one. I also felt bad because I felt like I had won that whole competition and then turned down the deal.
The prize, yeah.
And I'm like, somebody else could have took that deal.
Yeah.
And, but, you know, somebody told me a couple years later, like, maybe you saved somebody from the bullshit.
Oh, whoa, that's deep.
And I was like, damn, that made me feel a lot better about the shit. Because I always like felt bad, like I maybe like took food off, you know, somebody's plate. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, they was trying to turn me into some shit that was buck wild. And they didn't even hear none of my shit. Mm-hmm. So it was like, wow. But luckily I had good people around me that like was like, yo, these like Funk Volume niggas is like doing some shit. And yeah, we worked that shit out.
Yeah. Are we gonna get a Funk Volume reunion?
Oh man.
How is that situation going right now?
Maybe. I don't know, bro. I don't know. It's
Is everybody copacetic now or still some things to work out?
Yeah, I mean, you know, recently Dame and Hop
I saw that podcast
like hashed things out. Mm-hmm. But I don't know how well that translated into real life. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know, man. I don't know. But I do like just seeing Hop in the space where he's working and just like focusing on the music and shit. So I'm good with that too. But maybe one day, bro. Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. Some people just are better working by themselves, I think. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I just don't believe that you can force anything in this industry. Right. If it's not flowing for everybody, you know, somebody's, you know, energy is going to be thrown off, and one person's energy can fuck up everybody's energy. Yeah. And you know how that goes.
Yeah. The hardest thing to do in life is find good people.
It is. Absolutely. The hardest thing to do. But, you know, you just don't force it. You know, just like find you.
Exactly. So what can we expect from Still Moving?
Oh, man, look. Right now, everybody is individually, you know, doing their own thing. Reezy about to shine.
Shout out Reezy. Yeah.
Reezy about to shine. Reezy got an amazing album, amazing visuals, amazing rollout. You know, he's going to shine. Euros is always going to shine.
Bro, he's like a unicorn. His music is so good.
Euros is a god. You know, his mind just, I don't know how the fuck his mind work like that. Duh. But, you know, he going to always shine.
So are they all signed or is just like a collection?
No, it's just a collection right now. Good, no paperwork, signing, no nothing like that.
Take the pressure out of it, yeah.
You know, we were kind of working towards it when Funk Volume first dismantled and we were trying to like work with Dame. Mm-hmm. And then some shit happened on the back end and just not a good time, you know, realized it wasn't a good time to be trying to do anything like that, especially with you know, outsiders. So I feel like over the course of time, you know, it's just really about getting back to a good place. So, you know, I could really help everybody and not just be, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Do you have a manager now or are you managing yourself?
I'm managing myself, yeah.
How's that working out?
It's weird, but it's cool. only because, you know, for everything was... I'm used to everything being professional. I like professionalism, you know? I like to, even if you reach out to me right now, I mean, if you see this, then you probably know, like, this probably Disney. But, you know, I conduct myself like my own management. So you, like, most of the people that have done business with me in the last 3 years, y'all niggas was talking to me. You know, but I just carry myself like it's a management team, you know, because I'm all for professionalism and running things a certain way. Right. But the thing is it's not that I don't want a manager, it's that I just don't want to pay somebody to just like to just follow the emails, you know. I want somebody to be assertive and believe in it and believe that this can be on another level. Yeah. And then, you know, I want to build a relationship with somebody like that. Yeah. Because if not, then I can't trust you because I know how hard I'm going to go for myself.
Right.
I know I'm going to wake up every single day and go hard for me.
Yeah.
Like, probably harder than you going to go for me. But if I got, if you make me feel like you're going to get out there and you're going to ride with me, yeah, that's the kind of person that I want to rock with. And like, I think after Funk Volume, I tried to force some things, glue some things together that wasn't really glueable on some professional shit, just trying to have somebody professional in place so I didn't have to worry about it. Mm-hmm. And I could be an artist and focus more on the music because after the Funk Volume shit, I felt like the music was the most important thing at that point, you know? But the back end was just as important.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
So, you know, I went and made some kind of like, some quick moves and things like that. And I had some good people in my corner, but you know, when you don't come up with people and you guys aren't on the wavelength, you know, they might try to give you opportunities that you've outgrown, or opportunities that, like, just are completely an opposite direction of where you're trying to go,
right, you know? Damn, that's got to be tough to find somebody like that, man. But I'm sure that you got people knocking at your door, right? Or it's just you just letting them find you, or are you actively looking for them?
You know, I got people knocking at my door and shit like that. But, you know, this industry, bro, these niggas, you know, I'm be honest with you. I be like, man, what, you know, show and tell, what we doing, you know?
Prove yourself first.
Prove yourself, man, because I'm going to get out here. I'm going to get out here and do it for me. Like, I'm going to get out here and I'm not going to wait for nobody to do it for me. Like, you know, I'm going to go find the opportunities myself. Like, and like.
Has it been hard?
Yeah, it's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard, bro. Yeah. But, you know, when you believe in you, and you put the work in, you like, yo, I'm not just going to let y'all just like, you know, cut me out. Like, I'm not really putting in the work. You know what I'm saying? And if you don't got somebody that's going to go in the room and bark for you, you might have to do it yourself. For sure. It's like, you got a better chance, at least. Even if you don't get the opportunity, at least you got a better chance. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So that's kind of like always my mindset.
Yeah, you got more control anyway this way. Right? Yeah. You know what I'm saying? You seeing everything.
100%. Bottom, but you know, I know what a solid team looks like, and I know how important it is. You know, I don't want nobody to see this and be like, man, see, I know I ain't need niggas. You know what I'm saying? Like, nah, that's not what I'm saying. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying you don't need them niggas that ain't doing nothing for you or assertive for you or really believe in, like, this where this shit can go. Yeah. You know, you got to believe that there's levels to this shit. But some niggas is like, going to be on level one and going to try to make it seem like they on level 10 and not allow anybody to grow with them. So niggas going to come out and automatically try to press you for your shit and see if you really, you know what I mean? Like, nigga, is your jewelry real? Is your, you know? So you just got to be cautious about, like, the route you want to take and the energy you bring in and be ready for it.
Yeah, man. That's an interesting situation, man, from going from having that full team, independent team, to being on your own. Is it like, was that, what's the biggest thing you learned from that? Biggest lesson from the
Fun Volume? Well, you know, see, from the Fun Volume shit, bro, is we didn't have the full functioning team. You know what I'm saying? I think I had more of a full functioning team after Funk Volume than I did with Funk Volume. With Funk Volume, we just had Dame. And that was the biggest problem, is we had one person operating three artists and there was nobody else, you know? And we all needed to sprout differently, and one person wasn't gonna be able to do it. Imagine if there was a management team for Funk Volume and how much more ideas would have been thrown out and, you know, everything that...
less pressure on one, on Dame, on everybody.
Way less pressure, but less money. So it's just all about how you look at it, right? Like, if you want the money, you might... You know, that shit could get ugly sometimes when you don't pan it out the right way. So for me, it's like, I know that there was people that was trying to be put in place when Funk Volume was happening, and we couldn't structure it all the way right. So after, I had the gems. So that's what I instantly went and tried to do. And I know how it, I see how it could be a breeze for an artist. When you have a team. And they're setting everything up, hollering at you, giving you the ideas, and like, you know what I'm saying?
You're just showing up.
You're just showing up, baby. You just telling them like, hey, now I'm cool, or I'm cool, or I'm with it. Like, you know, and you know, you, this is the money, and this with the, you know, so I know what that feels like, and I know I'm like, but you gotta have that with the right people. You know, I was just blessed to be able to have that with some solid people, but it wasn't the right fit. You know what I'm saying? And then, you know, I had it with some other people who were kind of good at some things, but they weren't assertive at other things, you know, and you needed to be well balanced. So it's a balance.
Yeah, for sure. Now that, you know, we're in the climate, the music climate we're in today, we see people like Russ and these kinds of artists, and they're, you know, they're being vocal about the labels and they're finding ways to work with the labels. Are you, is it more interesting to you now to... Because you have a fan base, you know, so is that, is, are these options that you're exploring into working with the labels instead of, like, being actually signing to them?
Like distribution or like signed wise?
No, like working with the labels and not necessarily being like, you know, still being independent.
Yeah, like I've done some distribution deals, but mm-hmm. only with like Empire and like Foundation and things like that. But like it's crossed my mind before, you know. Yeah. This conversation a while ago, like Funk Volume, we got a label distribution from Warner Brothers in 2015. Mm-hmm. And Warner was a part of distributing the growing process, you know. And back then, CDs were still booming. Everything was still popping with the CDs and things like that. And the biggest thing for me was I wanted to get my CDs in stores, you know what I'm saying? And Warner told me that, like, this was the album. You know, it was going to be in Best Buy, Target, Walmart, you know, mm-hmm. back when the CDs. So I was extremely excited to be able to do that. And when it dropped, it just went into, like, all of Zia Records and, like, a bunch of, like, different little shops like that, right? No. They, like, dropped the ball on my project, right? Mm-hmm. And I was extremely upset about this shit. Then Hobson came out with his album. And when his album came out, you know, there was a lot of opportunities that he thought that he deserved, like Jimmy Kimmel and, you know, some of them late night TV shows. At his level, he was doing like 1 million views in one day. Mm-hmm. He deserved it. Mm-hmm. You know, I actually was surprised that it wasn't happening as well. Mm-hmm. But we were upset, like, about that. And I'll never forget, we went to do a meeting with Warner Brothers in New York on that 2015 tour.
After the fact, after this all happened?
After all this happened. Mm. And we were upset, you know what I'm saying? We were upset like a motherfucker. And I'll never forget being in there. We were in a room, you know, me, Hobson, Jaren, and Warner Brothers and Dame and shit. And I'll never forget Warner breaking down to me everything that we had accomplished, though. Like, even on my CD, I was so focused on my CD mm-hmm. not being in stores that I didn't really look at everything that we had accomplished, you know, with this album. Mm. And at the end, bro, I'll be honest, I looked at it and I was like, yo, this is progression. Mm. They yeah. just like, yo, Dizzy, next year, like, you could be fucking out of here.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yo, this is progress. Hop, though.
He was hot.
Oh, he was hot, nigga. He was like, y'all niggas is fucking me over. Yeah. I know there's a button y'all can push, nigga. Yeah. Woody, wah, 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 right? Like, he was bugging. Yeah. And, I mean, before the next year could come around to be able to work with Warner again, Funk Volume dismantled. Mm. So when Funk Volume dismantled, that's when I ended up out here by myself, you know? And I instantly, bro, like I said, being assertive, not waiting on nobody or trying to go to Warner waiting for, like, I just instantly jumped on tour with Logic, you know what I'm saying? And when I jumped on tour with Logic, I just started getting it in from there by myself. But there was a lot of potential to do some great things with Warner back in the day. And after the whole Funk Volume shit, I got so kind of like weird on everybody mm-hmm. because I had kind of been knocked out of my position and it wasn't in my hands.
Yeah.
So I kind of was like off everybody. Like, I'm you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And now we kind of like, now that I done built it back up and it feels like where it belongs again, you know, people are looking at it more on a like, damn, I've been listening to this nigga for like 10 years. Like, you know, I feel like there's so many people that have like grew up with me now. Like, if you were 16, you know, back when Smoke Out Conversations dropped, you 26 now. If you was 20, you 30 now. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so
bro.
It's like a different type of love, you know, and I'm extremely appreciative for it. It makes me like proud of what I've done up to this point, and like, where can I take it next, and how can I take it there without deteriorating what I've built so far? You know,
yeah, for sure, bro. That must have been a pivotal moment where you just jumped on tour with Logic, because if you would have stopped, that might have stopped your whole momentum.
I tell people that shit all the time.
Damn,
I'm
man.
Telling like,
because you never stopped. Like in my eyes, from a fan's eyes,
I never stopped.
Right,
I literally, like, planned ahead, like...
You knew it was coming to an end, so you was...
Well, I didn't know it was coming to an end until the beginning of, January, the first week of January in 2016. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, I thought that low key I could talk Hobson into keeping the label going and things like that. But you know, when Dame said he didn't work hard, it wasn't nothing Jesus could have said.
Yo, oh, the infamous line, bro.
Yeah, and once he said that, it was literally a rap, bro. Yeah. It was a rap. But like you say, bro, I just stayed active, stayed consistent. And yeah. like, I never wanted to take my foot off the gas because I didn't know what that would feel like or look like.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, it was a lot of negative energy. Mm. All that shit I had done, I had never seen no negative energy like that. Mm-hmm. Especially for some shit that I like really like had no part in of like mm-hmm. deteriorating. Yeah. It was weird times for sure.
Yeah, you were kind of just like an innocent bystander.
Yeah, bruh, just got hit.
That was devastating for me as a fan. We was so confused, dog.
Yeah, and, it was a very it was confusing time, bro. It was such a
strange bro. Time, bro. Because, yeah, we were, but you kept it moving, bro. You kept your foot on the gas, like you said.
I had to.
And now you got to, this is another reason why I feel like, you know, in the city, you know, I'm not just saying this because you're here, but I've been fighting for you in the conversations for a long time.
I appreciate that.
And because you really are kind of like, you know, you have a store, you have the career. It's like, what's the difference between him and Nipsey? You know what I'm saying? Like, what's the difference between for our city and, you know, what Nipsey did for his area, too? It's like, this is what all the artists, everybody from Vegas, you've done what we've all dreamed to do.
Word.
Really. You know what I'm saying?
Word, appreciate that, bro.
For sure. Angel told me the story about how the store kept moving or how the store got together. But from your end, was that always a goal for you to have a brick and mortar store?
Nah, it wasn't. It wasn't until I just started, like, I just, you know, just started just, I wanted to be more than just an artist.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I had the little weed strain shit going on.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, being a rapper, it just got, there was a point where I was just like, this rapper shit is corny as fuck, really? Boy. I'm like, these niggas is doing the most.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I ain't even want to claim this shit low key. I'm like, oh my God, what the fuck is going on, bruh? I'm like, yo.
Everybody's rapping and shit these days.
Yeah, I'm like, everybody, ain't nobody talking about shit. Right, like, I'm like, this shit is bugged out to me. And like, you know, instead of like you said, being a bitter OG, you know what I'm saying, or an old homie or anything like that, you know, I decided to put my focus elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And being able to do that, then I was able to like enjoy this new shit for what it was. Because I just wasn't so stuck on comparing it to my time, you know. The XXL freshmen's and shit like that, and like all that shit got like, so goofy, you know, like, and so, like, where niggas just didn't care. It was, like, crazy to me because when I was coming up, I just thought it was the top niggas.
Yeah, that's like, what it's supposed to be, yeah.
Artists, like, you know, it was like 10 of them, just 10, you know what I'm saying? And that was, and then I seen how it just became so, like, you know, whatever. And, like, people outgrew it and things like that. And, for me, it was kind of like weird. It was super weird for me.
Yeah.
So
the XXL thing.
Just new artists in general, XXL for sure. Yeah, like the double, just seeing like the.
That was a big moment for us too, though, for Vegas for sure.
Oh yeah, and bro, I wanted that, bro. I mean, 2012, like
it was still
2012. I was like, I ain't get it, but I was like 2013. I'm getting that shit. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, I was like extremely excited about that, but to see where the industry kind of went, it made me want to be like an entrepreneur more, like, you know what I'm saying? And then I saw what Nip was doing, and I was just like inspired by that shit.
Also, it's a marathon store, really has something to do with it, huh?
Yeah. I mean, Nip's whole career had a lot to do with how I carry myself, though, you know what I'm saying? Like, when I was first trying to come up, I went to go see Nip and J-Rock way back in the day. And like,
you went to the studio. You were in the studio, right?
Nah, this is later on in life after I actually met Nip. And like, he knew me as an artist and shit like that.
Okay. We a little toasty in here?
Oh, no, you good, bro.
Okay, cool.
You good. I went to a show, bro. I was in high school still. And I went to a J-Rock and Nipsey Hussle show in California over kind of by the Staples Center. And like, yeah, it was a cool show. But you know, Nip was a Crip. J-Rock was a Blood.
I was going to say, you went to a show out there. It must have been a dangerous-ass show.
Yeah, and show enough, nigga. Like, Nip and J-Rock killed it. The whole crowd, like, it was like a... It was all love at first. And then they left. Or we thought they left. And then they, like, started letting random niggas, like, get on stage and freestyle and shit.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
And, like, next thing you know, nigga, some nigga said some gangbanging shit, nigga, and it broke out.
Oh, no.
And shots rang out. Niggas started running. Woo-doo-wah-wah-wah.
Inside?
Inside, bro.
Oh, no.
And
they should have known.
We ended up running through, like, this parking garage. I never forget this shit either, because these Blood niggas spit at me and the homies. We was hot. I'm like...
They really? Spit at you?
Yeah, like they was like driving by us, like spit at us. Like it didn't hit us, but you know, I'm just like, really?
That's ultimate disrespect.
What the
God
fuck
damn.
We got to do with anything, man? I'm like, these niggas is tough for no reason, man. Yeah, yeah. I was hot about that shit, though. But you know how it is when it's a car full of niggas and you with two other niggas.
Just
you,
keep going. Just keep going.
Just keep walking, bro. Just keep walking, man. Fuck them niggas, man. Them niggas hoes.
Yeah.
But man, we kept walking, man, and Nip came down.
Oh, wow.
And I was like,
in the garage?
Yeah, in the garage. Parked up. I'm like, Nip, you still here? What the fuck?
Yeah.
I'm just like, yeah, man. I went over and chopped it up with him. This was back in high school, bro. And I never forget, you know, I asked him for one of the Crenshaw hoodies. And he told me they was 40 hots. And I'm like, nigga, I don't got 40 cent. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And just like that, he kind of chuckled like that. It was like, come on, man, I got you, man.
Oh, wow.
And he gave me and all my homies Crenshaw hoodies.
Dope.
And, to me, bro, that shit changed me forever. You know what I'm saying? It's like, that's I got a Nip moment and a K-Dot moment that changed me forever, right? Because I knew instantly that I wanted to be like that. I knew instantly that I wanted to be the nigga that could hook young niggas up, and like that's show tough. Love like that. And you know what I'm saying? And K-Dot, too. You know, I ended up going to see Kendrick Section 80 time.
Wow.
I was in California, and the homie, you know what I'm saying, was just like telling me that that shit wasn't too far. I fucked around it. I mean, I stood up for like 6 hours waiting for that nigga. The nigga came out so late, I couldn't believe it. Just like this nigga. But he came out and he did something that, you know, Vegas artists wasn't doing, which was performing without the lyrics.
Wow, yes. Shout out Franz, and Franz will be talking about that shit all the time.
Yeah, bro. And I'm a fucking, you know, coming from Vegas, we all, it's not a nigga here that had their lyrics out their shit. Like, we all, and that's because there wasn't no venues for us to even have a good enough sound system for niggas to hear us.
Right.
So it's like, you know what I mean?
Yep.
And I never forget, I went to that K-Dot show, and he ain't had no lyrics in his shit, and I was in the crowd, and that nigga was just rapping, and I felt like I was just frozen.
You're mesmerized.
Just mesmerized.
Yeah, yeah.
And he came over and was looking all in my face, rapping it to me and shit. And I didn't even realize I was like frozen, nigga, and until I wasn't. Like, and I was like, and that helped me a lot too, because every time I would do a show, if a nigga was frozen, I would think he was me and watching K-Dot. And I never tripped about niggas not moving or shit like that. So when I would come back and do my shows and shit, wasn't really about rocking the crowd. It was really about stunning niggas, like having niggas, you know, it like changed, bro. It changed so much for me, bro, because I would go out there and where niggas would probably come off and be like, man, was they rocking? I wouldn't care. Like, I would just know that they was feeling me. I know y'all feeling me.
Yeah.
I remember being in the crowd. I was feeling this nigga. I was feeling the music, everything, and was frozen, bruh. Just staring at this nigga, bruh. Like, this shit was so early. And I went back and told my partner, hey, man, we taking all the lyrics out the motherfucking songs. We ain't never doing that shit again.
That's the way to do it.
And then, you know, that slowly started to separate me too. You know, little things like that. All artists, though, any artist that's this artist that's listening to this, though, for sure, like, if you want to, that is a level up, you know? You can for sure do it. Like, you got to practice your lyrics.
Rehearse.
Do that shit.
Yep.
Rehearse. can't be the nigga that's like, I can't do it, I can't get, nah, nigga.
Yeah.
You can do it. Yeah. Just like, you gotta work towards it, build your stamina up. It's an important piece of like being able to feel you at the show. You know what I'm saying? Get your point across and not just like
karaoke.
Some DJ type of shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, for sure. Well, I think a big problem is that like probably 90% of the artists now use auto-tune and they sound like shit. You know what I'm saying? Without it, so
for sure,
you know what I'm saying? They can't get away with just doing that shit with nothing behind them.
For fucking sure.
That shit is crazy. This robot music is something else, man.
Yeah, these niggas are good at it though. I'm like, you niggas are good at the robotic music. Like some of these niggas, I'd be like blown away that they even found the fucking little.
Well, you gotta
tune.
give their engineer the credit they deserve.
Yeah.
Without the engineer, bro, there.
Ooh-wee.
Do you engineer yourself?
No, I mean,
do you do everything? Do you produce a little bit and do everything or?
Well, I gotta give my flowers to Reezy because Reezy taught me how to make beats. Reezy taught me how to record myself. Logic actually kind of gave me the like blueprint when I was on tour with him. He was recording himself,
mm-hmm.
and then he, you know, I just kind of learned what he was doing, but I still couldn't go back home and translate it, mm-hmm. like, you know what I mean? And Reezy came in and really taught me how to like record myself and like be able to get it to a good place where I can do it at the crib and bring it to the studio and we can make it sound good.
Right.
So that's really what I needed.
Okay. So you don't really, so you record yourself now or?
Yeah, I still record myself. Okay. Yeah, all the time.
That's it? Are you like one of them people that you only work with, like you only record one way in one place or do you go?
Oh, hell no.
Okay.
Yeah, I could record anywhere.
Okay.
I'm the type of nigga that likes to actually hit studios on tour and that and mm-hmm. try to tap into a different vibe, see what we can bring to the table.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I could pretty much record anywhere. I like in a sense of being an artist, just like, you know, those late nights, maybe when I'm off a little Hen Dog or something like that,
mm-hmm.
and I got a little vibe, instead of just going down there and writing the rap, I can actually put the idea down
and
wake up and build on it. And mm-hmm. I really enjoy that.
Mm, that's dope. Let's shift gears, man, real quick, from music to real world.
Okay.
So, you know, 2020 was crazy, you know, COVID, but, you know, you've always used your music as kind of like a journal, you know, and documenting mm-hmm. what's going on in the world. What's your diagnosis with the whole police brutality and where America is now, Biden and president, like how you feel about where we are today?
I think we're in a better place than where we were last year, mm-hmm. but you know, it's America, it's mm-hmm. America, you mm-hmm. know, so like, the history of this place is, you know, the more you learn about it, the more you can understand why it is the way it is, mm-hmm. you know. But it's really us when I look at it. Like, I always think to myself, how can I be like a small shift or change in like the mindset of our people,
mm-hmm.
you know, so we not doing it so much to ourselves
mm-hmm.
and we can fight these other problems, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
'Cause, The distractions can become everything at points. So I think we're in a good place. I think that, you know, people are back to being distracted.
Right.
I don't think that, you know, the police brutality and stuff is not happening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just think that, like, the distractions are back in the way.
Right.
We just got to be cautious, you know. It just, you know, the shit is real. I think it was put out there on a platform for everybody to be able to see, like, okay, this is what they still going through.
Because
I think there was a time where people was just like, they would hear the word racism and just be like, man, that's some old shit.
Yeah.
Come on, man, ain't nobody on that shit no more.
Yeah.
I think
white people felt like that. Like, white people, because it's like.
And black people, too. You would be surprised, family.
Mm-hmm.
You would be surprised how many people don't want to have that conversation.
Yeah.
They don't want to live in that stigma.
Right.
You know, of.
Ignore it.
Yeah, they don't want to live in a stigma of thinking that white people don't fuck with them
mm-hmm.
or there's racism out there or they have to be afraid of the police.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to live with that stigma, you know what I'm saying? And it got put out there in the mainstream for us where we all living with it regardless, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's just about, you know, how you control those emotions when, like, it comes across your plate.
Mm-hmm.
But it just makes me want to be a... like you say, bro, more of a positive force, you yeah. know? But I understand that positive shit can get corny. You can lose everybody.
Yeah.
So you got to find your balance with that shit. But it's like, it always makes me want to be on the greater side of things to always remind people that, like, yo, we still got a job to do.
Yeah.
There's still more that can be done.
Yeah. It's just crazy because, you know, the Rodney King video came out 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. And, like, we're still dealing with this. Like, the change still has not been made. And I don't understand what else. All the videos and shit, like, what is the, what, like, if you could fix this problem, how would you fix it? What do you think the solution is?
The laws, bro.
Mm.
I realized this too. I'm like, damn, it's really gonna be in the laws, changing the laws. That's how we got where we are now, is the laws changing. The laws used to allow there to be white only places.
Yeah.
The law used to allow there to be public lynchings. Mm-hmm. The law used to allow segregation in schools with kids.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the law allowed. Yeah. Every time the law changes, you get a little change.
Yeah.
You gotta attack these laws and figure it out. But here's the thing. If it's fuck the police, I say this shit all the time, if it's fuck the police, if it's fuck those motherfucking mayors and fuck all those politician motherfuckers, we ain't gonna change shit. Mm. Because
gotta work with them.
We got to figure out how to infiltrate that shit,
right.
You know? But you know how it is when you infiltrating some shit, they let it tear you down, and then later on in life, once you've infiltrated it and it starts to change, they give you your flowers, right?
Right, right.
So it's not going to always look good, but it's like, you know, we got to encourage niggas to do different shit, not just rap.
Yeah.
And not just ball.
Yeah.
And because if not, you know, the shift, it's going to happen. It's just going to take longer.
Right.
But it's going to, for me, it's laws, bro. It's all in the laws and constantly attacking their laws, constantly putting the pressure, more laws in place for the people in power, I guess.
Yeah.
So that shit can be regulated.
Yeah, for sure. I don't think there's any one real solution. It's just a complicated issue, right?
Absolutely.
And it's like a case-by-case basis. I think more people, especially white people, need to be exposed to other cultures at a young age. You know what I'm saying?
So
their first expression is, or their first, you know, experience is a positive one. You know what I'm saying? Because if you're a white dude and you grow up in a predominantly, you might have one or two black friends, and you grow up in a predominantly white suburb somewhere, and then your first encounter with a black dude is when you're 18 years old, 19 years old. It might not be a good one. You know what I'm
exactly.
saying? Might be at a party.
Naturally, drink, though. Right, you know? Yeah.
And so I think that's a big key is we gotta really, you know, like, I feel like that's why I was blessed, because I grew up around a lot of black people. I went fucking, grew up in Northtown, whatever, but my experiences as a kid were always positive. I always Word. Went to, you know, my friends' houses. We were just my friends. Yes, some of them grew up to be in gangs. A lot of them had, you know, been in jail, this and that. But yeah. At the end of the day, they're just my friends, and you see them as a person. But a lot, what I noticed as I got older, I'm like, oh, a lot of my white friends didn't have the same experience as I had.
Yeah.
And now they're brainwashed by, you know, media and what the perception of a young black male might be.
Absolutely.
Right. So I think that's a big factor. I just want to sprinkle that in there.
Nah, that's a huge factor, bro. It's a huge factor. I think it's extremely important, man. Gotta be diverse.
For sure, man. All right, man. Let's wrap this up, man. What can we be expected from Dizzy Wright 2021?
I'm about to give people what I feel like is a good body of work of Dizzy Wright in 2021. Like, where I'm at, you know, I put out a lot of music. Niggas will be able to go back and follow that journey on their own time. But I'm gonna stay consistent as fuck, bro. Like, I just took a year off. I ain't asked for that year.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? But I think it was the most needed shit that I needed as far as learning more about me and learning more about my family and my culture. And it just gave me more shit that I want to talk about and dish out there to the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I also know that there's a bunch of people, like I say, bro, just going through that shift. You know what I'm saying? That maybe been listening to me through their 20s,
mm-hmm.
headed into their 30s. You know, so I'm not gonna give you the same shit I was giving you when we was 19.
Right, right, right.
You know, you getting 30-year-old shit, nigga.
Yeah.
And all these young niggas gonna catch up, nigga.
Yeah.
And nigga, we gonna continue to grow. So that's what's gonna come from Dizzy Wright. On the opposite side, man, just finding different ways to be active. You know what I'm saying? In the community, finding different ways to be active in life in general. Finding seeds to plant and watching them grow. The weed shit is cool too, you know, but there's a lot of different little things that I know is out, that I know is out there that I'm not familiar with, and I want to be active. Mm. You know what I'm saying? Set good examples. And I mean, I want to smoke a lot of weed doing it.
Yeah.
But get back out on the road, fuck with the fans, and really get back to how this shit got to where it is, you know, organic love, organic chemistry, organic growth, and yeah, just see where it goes from there. Maybe even jump into a little acting, you know.
Oh, shit.
Yeah,
oh,
I mean, get on a TV show or something and yell at somebody, be somebody baby daddy or something. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that'd be dope. I think you could, I think you're one of those kind of people that could do whatever you put your mind to, for real.
Word, I appreciate that, bro. I'm definitely, I got big dreams, man. And another thing, I've exceeded my expectations, bro.
Already?
I exceeded my expectations, like, a long time ago. I had nothing to really compare it to, and I'm, like I said, I grew up in a house with just my mom. She told me no to everything. Yeah. I feel like I didn't have a lot of shit growing up. She told me no to everything. So, like, I'm chilling, bro. Like, from here, I just want to have fun with this shit. And keep our 10 toes down.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you pulling up, man. This is a big moment for me as a fan, big moment for the city. I know all my homies about to go crazy when they see this drop. Love. You know what I'm saying? But, yo, anything you need, anytime you want to pull back up, my door is always open.
I appreciate that.
However I can help with whatever you got going on, you know you got my line. So, you know what I'm saying? Till next time, bro. Love.
Easy call. We locked in.
Peace.
It's the East Square Podcast.